James and Matthew discuss Apple, Microsoft, BlackBerry, and overly descriptive titles in episode 92 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast.
Speaking of cases,
nice.
There's an interesting case law that's been going on with Tesla recently. I hope you don't mind me changing the topic.
No, man, make it happen.
That was an awesome transition.
I approve.
Thank you. I just wanted to give everybody a quick update on what's going on in the world of the electric car. Tesla wants to sell direct to consumers, and traditional dealers hate that because they've had a lock on the market, and they're afraid that if companies can start to sell things online, GM and Chrysler and all those guys and Ford and Japan, what are those Japanese companies called?
Japanese
Toyota and Mitsubishi. You know, they can all sell direct to the consumer online, cut out all the middleman stuff, and it might cut into profits of the highly profitable dealerships, and since dealerships drive a huge amount of tax money for local towns and stuff, there's a lot of political will to preserve them. But this is running into direct conflict with Tesla's strategy of being too small to have dealerships. So they want to sell direct to consumers, and North Carolina was one of the big early battlegrounds that they had to go to, because North Carolina was trying to pass a bill that would make it illegal for Tesla to sell direct to consumers.
Right.
Basically, what was going on? What's up?
Oh, you got quiet all of a sudden.
Okay.
You're back.
So basically what happened was Elon Musk drove on over to North Carolina and took the governor and the leader of the House reps out for test drives in the Tesla. And they were like, yeah, this is really cool. We want our people to be able to drive these. And so even though the North Carolina Senate passed the bill to make it illegal, the House and the governor were like, nope, we're going to let them sell them.
Nice. That's awesome.
Yeah, so Tesla will be able to sell direct to consumers in North Carolina. There's this big petition on the federal level to try to make it so that there's a federally regulated allowance to do that, which I come back to, why not let the states figure it out? But that's more political than we need to get into for most days.
Remember, you're only like international politics.
Yeah, that's right. Oh man, and this is a good week for politics. Oh boy,
a couple things happen.
SCOTUS. Oh man, they're getting crazy. And what's funny is, like, all of my I can't start because I won't know how to stop once my mouth gets moving.
What was this? Speaking of this, what was – I'm curious about the spaceship thing. What was that?
Oh, California
just
politics?
Just aside.
I had an article. It's called I Hate California Politics. And it sounds like the spaceship's not going to happen, the Apple spaceship that
– What?
I know. And the reason for it is basically there are so many regulations within Palo Alto and California at large that they do not think that they'll be able to build the big circular spaceship and meet all the regulations. And so they hired this lawyer to basically come back and give them, like, these are our three options. And, like, one is to make the changes that you want, which won't make it work. Two is to build like a really drab building that's just huge and more traditional, which Apple hates the idea of doing because it's Apple. Then they're like, they have an option of like making a smaller campus and making expansion places other places, which won't bring all their people together, or building entirely new campuses somewhere else where they could really set up shop, which is basically to say, move Apple out of California. And so they're trying to play, it sounds like they're playing a game of chicken with Palo Alto, saying, how about y'all figure out how to let us do this or we're going to leave?
Cupertino or Palo Alto? Where is it? It's in Cupertino, isn't it?
Cupertino, sorry, yeah. That's what I meant. It's like basically the same place.
Wow. Despite all of the, yeah, this is going to be awesome, let's go do it. Yeah. It's like,
well, you know, it's classic California politics. And what drives me nuts is it's like, if y'all haven't been following our bullet train debacle, which if you haven't been, good for you. but the bullet train debacle is crazy because it's like, number one, you know, everybody's like so stoked about, oh my gosh, you know, we're going to build a bullet train. It's going to be great. And it's going to be so fast. And the bill has changed so much where the train's never going to get above like 80 the whole way. It's got like 12 stops. It's going to take 7 hours to get from San Francisco to LA. It's going to cost twice as much as a plane ticket. Take three times as long. It's so ridiculous. It's just, it's one of the craziest things that's going on. It's going to cost billions and billions of dollars. And the biggest thing is that they're having to suspend a bunch of the environmental regulations in order to let it happen to begin with. And the environmental lobby's like, what are you doing? Like, those are there for a reason. Like, you don't get to just, as the government, you don't just get to ignore that because this is your pet project. And yet they're going forward with it and they're fighting the environmental lobby and they're able to basically not uphold the laws that they're supposed to uphold in order to build these trains. And then when they look at Apple, they're like, well, but you guys should toe the mark on these laws because this isn't my pet project. So, yeah. It just is so crazy. And they're going to drive California – and are they going to drive Apple out of California? It's like Los Gatos, the city that you and I grew up in. They're so lucky that Netflix – decided to play ball with them because Netflix was on the verge of leaving and was going to take all of the tax revenue for the giant multinational internet corporation with them, and they were just going to move to Campbell. They were going to move down the road and get a block because they're right on the border. And it just is so stupid. These people are so dumb sometimes. You're like, you guys got to – I mean, I, you know, obviously I'm not in favor of, you know, pillaging the environment for the sake of building pretty buildings. But I think that there's a place in between those two extremes that maybe we could all talk and figure out how to make it happen. But nobody cares. Nobody cares. Nobody cares in California. We can't even get our government to defend our laws. All right.
Got it. I understand the situation. Cool. So Tesla.
It's another news. So the other cool part is Fiat is building the Fiat 500, pretty cool little car. Everybody seems to like it. They built an electric version of the car, and they're selling it in California, and they sold out of them. They built it specifically for California because they're only dealing with Californian regulations, and they talk about there's like three phases. The first was to release it in California. The second was to release it into states that have very similar regulations as California. There's like 14 of them that they identified. And then the last phase would be to make a model that could drive in all states like the Tesla. But there just seems to be a really – I mean, everybody – you know, the problem with the Fiat is it's not Motor Trend's car of the year made by the amazing Mr. Elon Musk. So I don't know why you'd want one. But there's obviously a lot of demand for electric cars and growing demand. I don't actually know how much the Fiat.
Oh, here we go. We got the Nissan Leaf 21.3. Seats 5. Looks like they're all 5. The Honda Fit EV is 37.4. Ford Focus is 39.2. Tesla is 84.9. There's a bunch of Tesla ones. Another Nissan Leaf. Oh, well, come on. Where's the Fiat at?
I don't really know.
Okay.
I know that it seems like, to be totally honest, James.
Yeah.
Any other week, I'd probably like bother to go find it, but right now I'm just like,
okay.
I'm going to let this one slide.
That's cool. That's allowed. That's allowed. All right. Okay. Competition's good. That's all I got to say. But did I lose you?
Cool. What? No, I'm here. Can you hear me? Okay. Can you hear me now?
I can. Yep. So the other thing I wanted to talk about, which this may fall totally flat on you, but we're going to try it anyways. Let's see. Business Insider put together a list of books that inspired the tech's most influential people.
Yes.
Okay. So it's, I don't know, it's got like 10, I think. So Jeff Bezos, you know who he is. He, not surprisingly, likes to read about 10 books a month.
Why? What does he do?
Yeah, it's, well, he sells stuff. He's a salesman. his favorites, he has two. The first one is Built to Last, Successful Habits of Visionary Companies by Jim Collins. Awesome book. And The Remains of the Day, which is a fictional novel. And he said that if you read The Remains of the Day, which is one of his favorite books, you can't help but come away and think, I just spent 10 hours living an alternate life and learned something about life and about regret.
Which one was that one?
Remains of the Day. Mm-hmm. The Remains of the Day.
Interesting. I asked because I read like two books on my airplane flights instead of sleeping, which means I think I'm about ready to get another book.
Okay. All right. That one's good. That one is definitely good. I'm working through that that C.S. Lewis space trilogy you got me.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
It's awesome. It's, you know, normal C.S. Lewis, it makes you think really hard.
Yeah.
And just the, I mean, it's fiction. Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's fiction. And, yes. But the way that it's just some of the arguments and things that you see happening, you're just like, what? Just, it's crazy. Okay. Let's see here. Zappos CEO, Tony Heshi. I probably didn't say it right. He likes tribal leadership, leveraging natural groups to build a thriving organization. And he also likes Peak, how great companies get their mojo from Maslow, which is Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And then he also likes the happiness hypothesis, finding modern truth in ancient wisdom. Those are books. You're going to have to respond or something.
What? Are you there? Can you hear me?
Okay. Yes. All right.
You're just
listening? Is that the deal?
Well, yeah. Well, I was about to start talking. I was going to say, I don't recognize any of these books as the problem.
Okay. All right. I get nervous because I'm like, are you still there?
I know. I wish I could. I'm thinking, man, I should read all these books. They probably are really good. I mean,
they probably are.
When smart people tell you, this is a book that made me think about things that are important to me, it's usually good to perk up and pay attention.
Yep. All right. Fair enough. Bill Gates. He's had some success, I think. Not with the IE11, but we don't give him credit for that. So he likes, what is it? The Better Angels of Our Nature, Why Violence Has Declined. And he says that it's a long but profound look at the reduction in violence and discrimination over time.
Hmm. Wow.
And then he also likes, you like this, The Catcher in the Rye. It's like,
nice.
It's classic good right there. Billy Gates. Mark Zuckerberg, the CEO of some website place out there. You're going to love this.
This one's my fave. I actually knew this.
Yep. His favorite is Ender's Game.
I don't blame him.
By Orson Scott Card.
Yeah. That's a good choice. It's a good choice, boy.
He also said that he, because that's listed on his Facebook profile, but he also told the New Yorker a few years ago that he likes the Aeneid by Virgil. I probably said that wrong.
Yeah.
I don't know. But Ender's Game, it's highly good. I'll see the movie when it comes out.
I can't wait.
Let's see here. The New York City Mayor, Michael Bloomberg, who you were in New York for 45 minutes, so you kind of...
It's true. Barely.
He likes The Honorable Schoolboy, but it's like 600 pages and mostly description.
Yeah.
And there's almost nothing that happens, but it's fascinating. Hey, why'd you drop? What's the deal? So, Hopefully he'll join us again. We'll see. In the meantime, we'll keep going. And he'll just miss out on this. This one's not surprising at all. He'll miss the reaction. But Oracle's Larry Ellison, he likes the book Napoleon. Of course. Because he likes to take over things like crazy. And he says that it's an interesting to read for him for a couple of reasons. Number one, it's to see how a man of modest birth can, you know, to see how, what is it, a man of modest birth, he can do anything in his life, pretty much. And then to also see how, like this one, how history can distort the truth entirely, which is just funny that he says it. I like it. Another one, Timmy Cook. He likes competing against time, which I don't know what it's about. But they know that he really likes it because he hands out copies to Apple employees. I should probably look into that one. I'm going to write that down. Competing against time. Sounds good. And then Elon Musk. Sorry, Matthew. You're going to miss out on this because you're not here. But apparently he reads thousands of books. But he really likes... And are you back?
Yeah, Chrome crashed on me. My internet. Okay, yeah, which is not... And I'm nervous because I don't know why that happened, but it's actually not the first time that it's happened. My computer's freaking me out.
You're just in time to hear what Elon Musk likes to
listen to. Oh, baby.
His, out of the thousands and thousands of books that he reads, number one, he enjoys the Lord of the Rings series. Nice. But his all-time favorite is Douglas Adams' Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Yep.
That's awesome.
And then, and his biggest takeaway from that one was, the question is harder than the answer. And when we ask questions, they come along with our biases. You should really ask, is this the right question? And that's hard to figure out.
Wow, that's a really deep way to look at a really ridiculously goofy book.
Would you expect anything less?
No, actually, none of you. When you put it that way, not really. That's funny.
The founder of Square, Jack Dorsey. He also has done stuff with Twitter and whatever. He really likes the Checklist Manifesto and actually gives that away as part of his welcome kit to new hires. So
nice.
He must like it. I don't know. The other one that I actually wrote down was by Tim Cook, Competing Against Time, which is another one that he tends to hand out to people. So I'm like, okay, all right. Smart guys. I'm going to check them out. And then according to Walter Isaacson's biography of Steve Jobs, he listed William Shakespeare's King Lear, Plato, Clayton Christensen's Innovator's Dilemma, and then Cutting Through Spiritual Materialism, and an autobiography of Yogi.
He couldn't do anything like entertaining and simple. Sure.
Yeah, and he also likes Secrets of the Little Blue Box.
Nice.
So there. But there you go, man. Those are the books that people like. P.S. By the way, I guess the other one that you missed was Larry Ellison. He likes books about Napoleon. Like how an ordinary man can do great things, and then how history gets distorted. Yeah, you would like that one.
Yeah, not surprising, Mr. Ellison.
But there you go. Funny. Those are influential books Those are books that influenced influential people.
Nice, which makes them influential books.
That they are.
That's cool. I like that. I'll have to peruse that list more carefully.
I added a few to my wish list after reading it. I was like, okay,
I'll have to try to wade my way through some of the shorter, easier to read ones.
Which is why we're here.
Yeah.
We like online news articles. They're easy to
read. Exactly. Yeah, if it's got a really good title that pretty much sums up the entire article, that's actually
even
the best.
Better, which TechCrunch used to do punny titles, and now they just do massively descriptive titles.
Yeah, because like, they realize that a lot of times it's all people read.
Well, it's got to fit into a Twitter thing, right? And you got to be able to be like, okay, right. I got it all, and you know, and go. Which I'm kind of sad. I miss the days of the punny titles.
I know.
You know, whatever.
We still try to do goofy titles just for
like,
our audience's sake.
That's right, we do. You kind of have to listen to get it. What was one of them? Oh, here was one of them. This is a title, okay? A title. Okay. From the team behind Branch, Potluck is a new link-sharing service for the internet's lurkers who don't tweet or blog.
Huh.
That's a title.
It's kind of like your who, what, where, and when all in one.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I guess that's one of the things about the internet, right? Is things go faster and faster, and they normally that would be the lead, the first sentence.
Right.
They spent, let's just make that the title. Let's not worry about it. Like, okay.
Yeah, makes sense. I mean, you know, I guess it's working for people. You know.
Yeah, I don't know. Now that they're no longer owned by an independent guy who crows about how awesome he is, they. Yeah, started to judge how well they're doing.
Yeah, they've vanillified a little bit.
Well, you know, that's what happens when you get bought by a behemoth of a company. Which I don't
true.
Know, does
we,
AOL
we
count? Yeah, AOL's big, right? They count, they're big.
They're growing a little bit.
I don't know, growing,
they're on the rise.
Big.
They are, no, they're well, their stock is going up. And
well,
yeah, we almost talked about it like a month and a half ago. Them and
AOL
Yahoo
came out with a reader.
Shocked.
I mean, so they clearly, you know.
They're trying to get in the game.